Good morning. Today is Monday, June the 1st. Joining us this morning is Eureka Police Chief, Mr. Steve Watson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian.
It's been, well, the last couple times we keep getting together, we keep saying how interesting our times are. It would be nice to have one that says, you know, it's really been kind of a nothing month.
Yeah, they haven't stopped being interesting since we last spoke.
No, and I suspect that our influence is not that strong. We're probably not going to be able to stop it.
Fortunately, I think you're right.
Yeah. All righty, Winston, why do we say it?
Okay, I've got two here. Aloof or nail one's colors to the mast?
I don't know. Which one you want, Steve?
I'm not saying a word on either.
Okay, aloof. Aloof.
All right. Where does the word aloof get its meaning? I'll give you a hint. It's a nautical term.
Oh, that doesn't do me any good. Does that help you out at all, Steve?
No, it doesn't. I think I'm going to tell Luke regarding this question.
Yeah, maybe it's something from the crow's nest. How's that?
Being
above everybody. No? Okay.
A strong onshore breeze may blow a sailing ship onto coastal rocks. To keep clear, the helmsman must hold the vessel into the wind. The nautical term luff means to the windward, thus to hold a luff, or as we now say, aloof, means to keep clear.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's kind of like 6 foot separation, huh?
Is that an ancient form of social distancing?
Yeah. Oh, gee. Hey, I got a question for you. I think a lot of us are fatiguing with the mask thing, or we're dealing with not the behavior, but the interpretation of the behavior and concern and, you know, fear into the future and all that kind of stuff. Do you ever foresee that the masks are either going to be required or that you're going to have folks within the city limits go around and be the mask patrol?
Well, I have no desire to have our officers be the mask patrol, quite frankly. And, we have not been heavy on enforcement throughout this whole shelter-in-place order. We haven't really needed to. Yeah, there's minor violations here and there, but enough people, I think, have been following the spirit of the order that it was getting us where we need to be in terms of, kind of helping curb the virus here locally. I think for the foreseeable future, meaning at least the next several months, people are going to need to continue to be mindful and do their part with, washing their hands, maintaining social distancing, especially from strangers, and wearing their masks when they're going to be in close proximity to others, particularly in enclosed spaces. The risk of transmission is a lot less outdoors, which is good news for some of what we're reading. But we need to get to a place where, we've got a vaccination or enough people have had the virus that transmission is stopped or greatly slowed, in some kind of treatment protocol that's really truly proven to be highly effective, and then we can begin to hopefully get back to near normal after this. So I don't see people wearing masks forever, but for a period of time until we've got on top of COVID-19, some of these measures are going to continue to be necessary, I think.
What do you think is going to be, or have there been any indications, what the crossing the threshold point will be? Having, this flattening out thing kind of implies that there is a curve, and I don't think we've had enough here to really have a curve per se. Going 2 weeks without a reported, going a month and only having two or three reported. Is there any feedback at this point?
I'd probably defer to the county public health officer on that one. There's a number of different ways you can look at that. One would be, a combination of very robust, widespread testing, so you truly have a much more accurate picture of how widespread the disease is in our community, and then compare the number of known cases and new cases and hospitalizations. Right now, we are continuing to ramp up testing, which is probably one of the reasons you're seeing more and more reports of confirmed positives compared to maybe when we first started this process. But it's difficult to determine how widespread it is in the community, I think without also the widespread testing, which is one of the goals the governor has and the county health officer has. So as testing's increased, I believe locally we're a couple times the state average on that, so it's, we've been doing it relatively well here. I do think it seems pretty obvious that it's definitely in our community and more widespread than some would assume. But I also think Humboldt's in a unique position as an isolated rural northern county where we have the ability to have more flexibility in opening up and kind of controlling our own destiny in that sense.
Well, and that'll be an interesting dynamic, and I know you've got a soft spot for it too. With the tourist season coming up and the hotels and folks like that that have been closed for 2 or 3 months, I mean, I can't imagine these guys would be able to hold on for 6 months or, you know, miss the summer season and be able to do anything other than to put a for sale sign in front of their facilities.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, and I just think we're reaching a place where now that we have the medical infrastructure in place, increased testing, some of the equipment and PPEs that are needed, you know, those starting to open up so they're more available. We're really to a place where, you know, this shelter-in-place fatigue has set in and is even turning to anger in some cases. People are just about done, and so something has to give. You know, businesses are closing. Some of them are permanently, you know, a lot of lost jobs at the moment and some pretty bleak financial forecasts for the next even few years potentially. Something's got to give, and so we got to strike that balance where we allow people to get out and live their lives again, and businesses to open up, the economy to revive and to come back, while at the same time continuing to exercise some common sense, sensible precautions that can help slow things down and better control. And I think that's probably the balance that's needed here.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Chief Steve Watson. Steve, some of the different challenges that are out there, and obviously we're going to talk about what's going, you know, what's been occurring in Minnesota in the second half of the show. You alluded to frustrations. Is your staff dealing with frustrations personally? Are they running into frustrations on the street? Are you starting to sense that there's a little bit of a shifting going on out there?
You know, I think it'd be fair to say that I think my staff, just like me, and I'm assuming to you, you know, having been under a shelter in place now for well over 2 months, you know, we want to go on vacation. We want a chance to travel a little bit, you know, and to enjoy life and to spend a little of that hard-earned, you know, vacation time. And that's one of the frustrations is the, you know, travel restrictions. I certainly get it in that we don't want people coming from areas of the country and the state that have high rates of infection into Humboldt County and spreading the virus here further, you know, and potentially putting the health officer in a difficult place where she feels she needs to lock things down again. But at the same time, as you mentioned previously, tourism is a big economic factor for Humboldt County, and for good reason. It's just a tremendously great place, not only to live, but to visit. And gorgeous, and a lot of outdoor activities, and some of the most beautiful country in the world. And so we rely on those tourist dollars, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to find that balance with public safety. I don't think that our officers are having too many tense situations with people over the order right now. Part of that is the way that the city of Eureka has elected to handle the shelter and order place, with de-emphasis on enforcement and education and engagement as our go-to on that. And I think a community that gets it in terms of the bigger picture, yeah, there's exceptions here and there, but most people understand we're doing this to protect the most vulnerable, you know, among us, and we need to do our part. So I haven't seen that yet. You know, what protests we have had locally have been responsible and respectful, as they should be, but people have still had the ability to have their voices heard.
I would suspect that in a smaller community like ours, I mean, they're going to recognize some of your folks either from growing up with them, seeing them in the store, the, you know, the grocery and all that kind of stuff. So it might be a little bit different than what some of the metropolitan areas are dealing with, where you got lots of bodies and you don't really know anybody.
Yeah, it could be their next door neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, that doesn't preclude us from giving you a hard time, however.
You know, it doesn't. Been there.
Yeah, understood. So how are you guys planning for the next 2 or 3 months? You've got the budget concerns that you alluded to. Certainly the state is not indicating that there's good stuff. The city administration has been in turmoil in the last little bit. How are you progressing as a department head?
You know, I think we're holding, well, I don't think, we are holding strong here. You know, we've had that, for instance, last week was real rough. We had 2 back-to-back homicides, which is unusual. But I'm intensely proud of our investigative team. I can't get into details right now on your show. More will be coming out here in the coming days. But, you know, we have, you know, the first homicide is shooting. Is likely going to be determined by the DA to be justified self-defense based on the circumstances. So that case is solved, though there's still a lot of investigative work left to be done to put the case together and close it out. And then we had a brutal murder on Campton Road that is taking a tremendous amount of investigative resources, a lot of lost sleep over the past 7 days, but they've also got it done. We have our man in custody on that. People can, I think, sleep easy. And when the entire story comes out and all the things this person is suspected of doing, it's going to, I think it'll make some waves locally. It's going to be somewhat shocking to people, but they're also going to be very grateful that he's in jail and not going anywhere else.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Those two, nationally, we had that that senior in Connecticut, the UConn senior that you know did his stuff. When there's a national event like that, do you guys get not put on notice or put on alert? But you know, is there any kind of an awareness or a hyper awareness for something like that, or for an individual like that who might choose to hide in our area?
Well, it's not like Humboldt County hasn't, had some history with that. We had a truck driver that dropped a woman's severed breast off at the sheriff's office a few years before I came back here to work, right? And he ended up being a serial killer. That happens. I lived in Santa Cruz for a while, and they had a few famous ones, including, was it Kemper? Was that his name?
Yep.
It can happen anywhere, I think, is the message. You always have to be on alert, and I think, looking for patterns is very important in these kind of cases so that you don't miss it when you do have a prolific serial, violent offender out there, whether it's rape, robbery, homicide, or whatever.
Yeah, and we've certainly have had our share of those, as I think anybody is aware of. So it's just part of the job, just kind of paying attention what's going on around you.
Yeah, internal vigilance comes with the job. It's what the community expects and needs, and so that's what you do. It's not a perfect science, especially, when you work in an area where you have high call volume and just a lot going on. Sometimes important things can get lost in the noise a little bit, so you got to be vigilant about that as well. Certainly during the COVID period, we're not seeing the reduction in crime that some places speak to. I don't know if that's because we're paying more attention and running statistics, or just the dynamics of our community are a little different. But a few key areas of crime have definitely increased in the last 60 days, domestic violence being probably the most concerning one, with about a 50% increase.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon. Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Steve, I would suspect that you are monitoring the situations in Minnesota in twofold. One is just a general citizen, okay, and the other is a law enforcement professional. And we've had the situation in the suburbs there outside of St. Louis in the last little bit. Some guys will try to go back to the Rodney King situation in Los Angeles. Do you see trends? What is your initial response to what you are aware of with this case back in the Twin Cities?
Well, you're referring to the death of George Floyd, a black man that was captured in cell phone video, as I understand it. The private citizen that was filming officers, they had him detained on the ground in handcuffs for, I don't know, some offense or call they went to. I don't know all of the details. I think he may have been acting like he was under the influence in or on a vehicle and some other things. But the thing that was shocking to people, and quite frankly is shocking to me, is as he lays there on the ground, there appeared to be plenty of officers available. If you look at some additional footage that came out, I think there was at least four officers there. They had him well under control, and one of the officers, who happens to be a white officer, is seen kneeling on his neck for like 8 or 9 minutes while he is saying, and he's having difficulty breathing, or he can't breathe, and he's essentially begging for air. And I can't fathom how that was justified and needed, and it's deeply disturbing to me and disappointing. Those officers are being held accountable, and not just the one that was kneeling on his neck. There are other ways to restrain a person on the ground that doesn't compromise breathing like that. There's positions you can place someone if they're having a medical emergency to kind of assist them. But you look at, like, in particular, one of the other officers is seen, doing nothing, standing there, and if anything, trying to pretend like it's not happening behind him. Well, we train our officers, you have a duty to intervene. You're just as guilty if you stand there and watch an unlawful use of force, let's say an officer beating with a baton a defenseless suspect that's handcuffed on the ground, as an example. You stand there and do nothing, you're just as guilty as the person who is committing an assault under color of authority in that case. And so while I always urge people not to rush to judgment, that limited camera angles often don't tell the whole story, and it's important to get the whole picture, just like they'll have to do with a thorough investigation, both criminal and administrative there. In this particular case, this is one of those that is just, again, shocking, and I can't envision a reason why it was justified, reasonable, and necessary for that officer to put the weight of his knee on George Floyd's neck like that, and especially for a 9-minute period, and ignore during that period the fact that he's obviously having a hard time breathing.
The fact that race was injected into that, does that influence anything from your perspective? Whether it was a black officer, white officer, brown officer, does that change any of the dynamics, or does it have
significant influence?
Well, you know, it shouldn't, in that it should not matter. And in one sense, it does not matter the color of the victim or the officer. In this case, it appears the officer may have committed a crime. You know, so it doesn't matter the color involved in terms of the eyes of the law and whether it's, you know, a crime, not a crime, right, not right. However, with our country's history of race relations and, these cases that crop up here and there around the country and are captured, you know, and create such a high degree of concern, in our communities and even fear of law enforcement by, people of color, that's a larger issue that goes beyond just one single incident. I do think it's important to own this, in that there are clearly still pockets of hate in our country that need to be rooted out in some places more than others. That while I truly believe the vast majority of the nearly 1 million law enforcement officers in our country are honorable people and do not do these things like what was depicted, with George Floyd, there's still pockets of racism even in the law enforcement community that have to be owned and rooted out, and cultures change that they're absolutely unacceptable. And how to restore trust with the community. At the same time, let's be real here, it's also unfair to paint all law enforcement as racist, individuals, are violent people, because that is not true. But at the same time, you can't pretend like this never happens. We still have a lot of work clearly to do. Now, whether this particular case at the end of the day was motivated by race at all, that's what the investigation.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. Steve, kind of a little bit of a more of a rapid fire on this one, in this segment. Training that you and your staff go through in California, is it significantly different than what Minnesota trains to? Are California standards higher, or are there standards that are American standards?
Well, based on what I saw in the video, it must be higher. California has some of the, lack of a better way to put it, strictest use of force standards in the nation, especially with the changes to the law at the beginning of the year. We also have some of the highest levels of training requirements in the nation for law enforcement. And, so that, I think that is important to note. Doesn't mean we always get it right or perfect, but just going back to the video of George Floyd, again, while I said that, I don't yet have the whole picture, and I usually urge people not to rush to judgment too much, I can't do anything but look at that video on what I saw for 9 minutes and absolutely condemn the actions of that officer and at least the one I could see standing there doing nothing while that was taking place. That doesn't represent who we are, the noble profession of policing, the Eureka Police Department, or any of our local agencies. And we wouldn't stand for that. And, it's just deeply disturbing. And it's disappointing because, here again is this one, event that, is just so shocking to people as they watch it. And there's a tendency to kind of paint all of law enforcement with a broad brush. And that's not fair either. At the same time, we have to own that we still have, work to do. And, something I'm following closely in the news, and through COVID, I think, kind of a little bit like 9/11, people have come to see officers again even more as guardians and protectors and heroes in their community, rightfully so. They can't shelter in place. They're out there taking extra risks every day for you and I, whether it's tracking down a murderer or just conducting their duties to protect and serve persons and property while COVID's going on, you know, it takes a degree of commitment and dedication, bravery and compassion for others to do the job. And those are traits that we certainly highly prize and desire. And so acts like this that we saw with what happened to George Floyd and what many are calling his murder based on what the video shows can undermine that faith and that trust that we as a profession across the country has built.
Now, on the flip side of that, Steve, we also had three police stations broken into and firebombed or burned or ransacked on Thursday night.
And that is a good thing to point out because that's absolutely wrong and unacceptable as well. And, you know, and there's some hypocrisy with that kind of violence and action as well. And that should not be the way to protest something, you know, like this. You're not only with the police stations, but there are business owners that had nothing to do with any of this that are already hurting with, this pandemic, having their property and their livelihood destroyed. People are using it as an excuse to loot. You know, that is absolutely wrong, too.
Yeah, it's rather challenging. Now, we're hearing some references to complaints against an officer. Is that something that's rare? Is that a kind of part of the job? What kind of references do we have about complaints against an officer?
You know, complaints do come with the territory of being an officer, just based on the nature of the work and the tens of thousands of interactions under tense circumstances that you have with citizens. So it's important when you look at a number of complaints that an officer has in their file to keep that in mind. Often the majority of them are completely unfounded. However, they can also indicate a pattern of behavior based on the nature of the complaints and what the findings were. If they're sustained because the officer has violated policy or committed misconduct, then you know, that's a problem as well. And if they have a personnel file or history with a lot of sustained complaints, that can be indicative of, of a big problem that needs to be dealt with as well. But people shouldn't jump to the conclusion just because an officer has had a lot of complaints that they're all valid and sustained. That's often not the case.
All righty, Steve. Thank you very much. Hopefully we'll get some clarity on this issue and we won't have to deal and the Eureka issues that we've already talked about, and we won't have to be talking about things along these lines next month.
It'd be great to be talking about the good news.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.
You.